Hello, greetings and salutations. Here we are again for episode 2 of Quantum Conversations, aka QC, where each episode has a particular topic which may or may not be threaded to a previous episode. But one thing is certain over here at QC, we always wax lexical and occasionally may get lyrical. My name is Nyusha, the show's brainchild writer, self-flagellating editor, host and questioner-in-chief. And with me is my technical sensei, intrepid sound editor, and co-questioner-in-chief, Paul. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Nyusha. So good to be back here with you for episode 2.
It's great having you here. How are you?
Oh, doing well so far. Excited about this and glad to be here. How about yourself?
Well, I'm doing very well. I don't know whether listeners can hear this, but we have had quite the continued downpour, rains and thunderstorms. We're seemingly having a bit of a break, but if readers do hear off and on a bit of rain and thunderstorms, not to think that we have now ventured down the path of ASMR, but if this does end up being a relaxing experience for you, then so much the better.
Wonderful.
Well, as you guys know, the aim of our program is not just to tap into pertinent themes and topics, but to dig a bit deeper and examine aspects within these topics that are often overlooked, not considered, conveniently omitted, or intentionally redacted. An openness to engage in meaningful dialogue wherein we examine, critique, and endeavor to push past confined spectrums of orthodoxy or controlled narratives, hopefully, will give us the opportunity to broaden perceptions and understanding, not just of ourselves, but of the world we interact and live in. I'm a firm believer that critical and independent thinking is as important as being able to change one's mind, especially as one gathers new evidence, ideas, and information. This is paramount to our personal, mental, and spiritual development. After all, nothing is really set in stone, except perhaps stone itself. And even then, boulders can be moved. So what's on our menu today, Paul?
Today's quantum conversation is on the topic of work. It's such a multifaceted issue that we have in fact dedicated 2 episodes to it. In this episode, we'll be discussing toxic work environments and its framing within the current narrative.
And we'll also take a look at what is and perhaps isn't being defined as toxic work. In what ways this is or isn't being addressed, and how these issues are impacting people and their decisions regarding future employment. We'll also take a look at how so many of us relate, feel, and connect to the meaning of work, and what new thinking and actionable steps we might need to take in order for a meaningful paradigm shift to take place. So, Paul, if I say the word work, what are some of the first adjectives or descriptive terms that come to mind?
Ah, yes. Well, I suppose I would say that it's a 4-letter word, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, seriously, though, I suspect some initial adjectives would be dread, fear, monotony, anxiety, although I'd have to balance that out by saying fulfillment, enrichment, personal growth all come to mind. Mm-hmm. How about you, Nyusha?
Well, I would say onerousness, responsibility, boredom. On the other hand, also upskilling, mobility, both financial and sort of geographical. But yes, like you, I also see it as a 4-letter word.
Ah, dear.
Well, now that you have heard our take on the word work, what adjectives spring to mind for you? Perhaps you've been able to carve a well-paid and rewarding niche for yourself and love what you do despite the occasional hurdles and challenges. In that case, well done you. You're an example of what is possible. That said, I would also venture to say that many of us out there might be anywhere on the spectrum of "it's fine, you know," to "this is a soul-crushing job which I hate, but I have to do it in order to pay the bills." And for those who feel like they connect anywhere along that spectrum, we hear you. One of the key things that comes up again and again in employment and across professions are toxic work environments. And I'm not necessarily referring to the real chemically toxic work settings, though that would certainly count. But in this context, we're talking about the many things that make the workplace difficult, unhappy, suffocating, and, well, just downright miserable. along with a high chance of burnout, as we talked about in our first episode, toxic work environments are amongst the biggest complaints among people in nearly all fields of work and seemingly among most demographics. Clearly, something is very rotten in workland. Is it by design? Probably. Does it cast a tangled web of how we have been conditioned to live and make a living? Yes, but that's a tangent for later. We'll begin to take a look at what we can find in established narratives and the mainstream articles on toxic work environments. It's worth noting, for example, that MIT Sloan published an article in mid-March of 2022 titled "Why Every Leader Needs to Worry About Toxic Culture," in which they address the role of leadership and the five main attributing factors to toxic culture in the workforce, especially corporate environments. And drawing from another MIT Sloan January 2022 analysis, SHRM, which is also known as the very, very exciting title of Society of Human Resource and Management, published their own analysis that month and defined toxicity in the workforce as characterized by employee reviews as workers feeling disrespected, including unethical behavior, abusive managers, and a cutthroat environment. Other leading predictors of turnover included job insecurity, burnout, notice that word come up again, lack of recognition, and a poor response of COVID-19 pandemic. But before we dive in, Paul, where can listeners find all the information that we're referencing to in this episode?
So we will leave links to all of the articles cited and maybe even any other pertinent information in the description of the show below.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Paul. So before we begin our how should I put it, our mind picking session, shall we take a gander at some of the resources?
Yes, indeed we shall. First up, I've got an article from Psychology Today published in October of 21. Are all workplaces toxic these days? And this is written by Catherine Brooks, who is a career counselor. She introduces the article by stating that she began a career counselor about 40 years ago, and despite seeing periods of boom and recession during these years, that, quote, this is currently the strangest and most stressful job period she has ever witnessed, and whether you are working or not, you are experiencing the fallout from it, unquote. She speaks of her own experience with being unhappy in jobs and needing a period of detox in between jobs, which eventually led her to realize that many others were going through the same things. She stated that, quote, I realized that detox may not be hyperbole. We are experiencing a lot of stress and trauma in the workplace these days, unquote. The Great Resignation, which we discussed in episode one, is also brought up, and it goes on to affirm that she feels employers need to take these issues more seriously and ask questions, what will bring them to do so? Possibly difficulty in hiring new workers, competition from other companies that may pay a better salary. She has a quote here that says, quote, when will employers realize that their platitudes and excuses aren't working for either their employees or customers? Their marketing offices are on overdrive, telling us how important we are as customers or workers, but their behavior says otherwise. Platitudes of we appreciate you or we appreciate our workers fall flat in the face of real everyday work conditions. Knowing you're appreciated doesn't help if your workplace is understaffed, you're asked to do more with less, you're handed additional duties and workloads without extra pay, and you were told you have no choice or say. Who cares if your call is important to us if we have to wait an hour to connect with representatives, unquote. So should we leave this up to employers to solve these toxic work environments? Call me skeptical, but I don't know that's the answer. She also adds some coping tips for toxic work environments to conclude the article. And while there's some great advice there, I'm just left with the question, is that all we can hope for? Simply coping?
No, yeah, that's a really good question. And she does bring up an important component about people sort of just not wanting to hear, you know, essentially, you know, those platitudes, oh, we really appreciate you. Well, if you do, then, you know, put your money where your mouth is.
That's it.
Sorry, go right ahead then.
No worries. So, okay, in my second article, I take a look at something from the Harvard Business School Working Knowledge site, and it is titled Four Steps to Building Psychological Safety That High-Performing Teams Need Today, unquote. This is written by Kara Baskin on June 14th of 2023. This article takes a look at post-pandemic workplaces and focuses on a term coined by Harvard Business School professor Amy C. Edmondson in the 1990s, and that is team psychological safety, unquote. It is described as, quote, work environments where candor is expected and where employees can speak up without fear of retribution. When employees feel psychologically safe, they're empowered to iterate and to take risks, leading to better team performance, unquote. The term later gained traction through a Google research study in 2012 called Project Aristotle. The project brought the idea to the mainstream by identifying psychological safety as being of key importance to a successful team and healthy work environment. It goes on to say that it has become critically more important through the strains and complexities of the pandemic and up to current day. Since the COVID-19 pandemic, Professor Edmondson has said, quote, psychological safety is literally mission critical in today's work environment. You no longer have the option of leading through fear or managing through fear. In an uncertain, interdependent world, it doesn't work, either as a motivator or as an enabler of high performance. So after reading this, my main question, why did this theory take so long to gain traction when this is something, you know, she brought about in the 1990s and now 30 years later, people are taking notice?
Yeah, probably because it wasn't convenient, as so many things that are truthful are, right? They're not convenient.
This is true.
Yes.
This is true. Okay.
Well, Paul, I've got a lot, but I'm going to try to condense some of this stuff. So, as you know, previously I had sort of referred to the MIT Sloan analysis and also SHRM, the Society of Human Resource and Management, very sexy title there. it's worth noting that SHRM had done their own analysis based off of the MIT Sloan Management Review. And in January of 2022, they did an analysis called Toxic Culture, Top Reasons People Quit. And they basically took data from 600 companies, including turnover from April to September of 2021, as well as Glassdoor reviews. For those of you that don't know, Glassdoor is basically a sort of employee website to get an idea about general review about different companies, from as well as sort of salary ranges. So they took the Glassdoor reviews from the last few years and then included about 172 culture metrics. You can find out more about it by going on the link. So the research showed that the industries with the highest rate of attrition are apparel retail, management consulting, and technology, with areas such as fast food, specialty retail, research hospitals, and hotels and leisure tying in. And the primary question was, why are workers leaving their jobs, right? Many factors include some of the obvious ones: toxic work environments, burnout, long hours, lack of adequate pay or benefits, etc. And employees also expressed a desire for more flexibility in their work schedule and opportunities to work from home. So how are employers responding? Well, according to SHRM, across industries, job seekers and employees are becoming more selective and expect something different from before. That makes it essential for employers to develop a compelling employee value proposition that includes competitive compensation and meaningful benefits, especially career development opportunities and flexible work. So my question is, well, that sounds all very much like a common sense solution. Are employers across sectors actually making any meaningful change? Or is this all just lip service and shiny banners? Because if I take a gander, as I like to say, through the employment sort of job offers, I don't really see much in terms of compensation. And they will say things like, oh, we've got a fun working environment, and you have no idea what it means. But the litany of what they expect you to do is very, very, very long. Yeah. Moving on, though, in the world of tech, it might not be surprising to know that there is a huge problem with toxic culture and toxic work environments. So IT Brief provided a bit more analysis in that particular area. And the author, Shannon Williams, mentions that they took Talent LMS, which is a learning management systems platform, In collaboration with Culture AMP, which is an employee experience platform, released a report on toxic work culture in the tech industry, including the drivers behind it and the ways to combat it. The study, surveyed U.S. employees. Interestingly enough, it doesn't state how many people were surveyed in the tech industry, looked at what contributes to toxic work environments, and this including things like leadership. So the survey revealed that 45% of employees, and that's about half, who experienced toxic work environment in their companies plan to quit their job because of it. Toxic culture has pushed 45% of employees towards quiet quitting. And nearly 50% of respondents said that a toxic work environment negatively impacts their work performance, their physical health, and or that they were suffering from burnout as a result. So we're looking at, you know, issues, big issues in the area of tech, but I would say that it's not just tech. Things like long working hours, working at the weekends without additional pay or adequate compensation, a lack of transparency and communication from management and leadership, as well as a lack of professional courtesy and consideration. So it's worth noting that nearly half of employees in toxic tech companies say that leadership is unaware of the toxicity and lives in a bubble where company culture is perceived as healthy. And almost half, approximately 49% of those surveyed, say they don't do or say anything, which is a bit, you know, astonishing. And 29% of those say that they don't believe that it will make any difference if they say anything, whereas 20%, they're just too nervous to do so anything because they're afraid of the consequences. So I think it's worth noting that this survey highlights the importance of leadership and senior management in creating and maintaining a healthy workplace. But it's also worth asking, what if management is being pressured or getting their marching orders from higher up? So, for example, their shareholders, governing boards, company investors, etc. Just worth considering.
That's a great point.
Yeah, because we always think it all falls on management, but management also takes their orders from whoever else is running the company. So
exactly.
If it's not the immediate leadership and it's, you know, the structures within that are sort of making those decisions, then management really doesn't have all that much power. Just worth noting. And one of the things I think we're looking at, Paul, is, you know, we've touched upon this a little bit, but we're looking at the continuation of the Great Resignation, you know, and this is actually something that we're seeing that has no end in sight. And one little tidbit, the person who actually came up with that term is an associate professor of Texas A&M University, Professor Anthony Klotz. And it's interesting because I don't think he could have foreseen that this was, or maybe he did, I can't go into his mind, but that he could have foreseen that this thing that, you know, he came up with in May of 2021 would still be so much at the fore. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because in an article in March of 2023 in Sifted magazine online, author Merriam Parrington talks about the Great Resignation, and we're going to see a direct correlation between resignation and toxic workplaces. So we're seeing things like 4 out of 5 employees plan to switch job in the next 12 months, and that's in Europe, that's sort of EU-wide. And I would probably venture that's also US-wide. But this is, the statistics here are pretty astonishing. We've got 86% of EU professionals and 76% of their US peers plan to hand in their notice within the next 12 months. And that's according to a survey based in Berlin. Oh, well, hello, thunder again. See, the thunder, too, it's agitated by this whole situation.
It is. It's a sign.
Exactly. It's a sign. So it's worth noting that this is according to a survey by a Berlin-based platform called Leapsum of 750 professionals, mostly in IT and tech, across companies in the US and Europe. So their primary reason for quitting: compensation, benefits, and unfair performance reviews, economic outlook, potential for mass layoffs, inflation, lack of transparency, Transparency, yeah, sorry, poorly made or vague performance reviews were amongst the many reasons that people, and specifically in IT and tech, have quit, and with US workers especially citing sort of a lack of work-life balance. So I'm going to tie this into yet another survey because, you know, I did a lot of deep diving with the surveys. Indeed, which most of you guys know is a job website, is an employment website, published in early of 2023, a survey of US workers who had switched jobs at least twice since the start of the pandemic. And 92% of those who were surveyed said they felt that life is too short to stay in a job they weren't passionate about. So what were they looking for? Well, more flexible working hours, hybrid or remote work, higher hourly wages. So, you know, with a $20 to $25 minimum, happiness, well-being were also marked as the top things employees are seeking, which Indeed recommends for employers to consider in order to attract talent. I'm noticing a pattern here, right?
That's right.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting that if we've got statistics that 47.4 million Americans quit their jobs in 2021, and over 50 million in 2022. And even though, you know, experts say, oh, this trend is going to be winding down by the end of 2023, it's definitely far from over because we're still seeing this trend spread throughout Europe, Australia, New Zealand, and beyond. And interestingly, the Indeed survey also includes results from managers and leadership, indicating more openness to hire people from different professional backgrounds and more consideration for hiring individuals with requisite experience and skills, even if they don't have a university degree. So this shift in this rumbling going on in the employment shows that, you know, this massive dissatisfaction of people leaving the workforce is a culmination of just both the toxic work environments, but also just a complete lack of feeling fulfilled monetarily in terms of life-work balance, etc. You know, mm-hmm. I've got loads more stats, but I'm not going to burden everybody with that. But I do think there's one more thing to bring up, and that's worth mentioning, is that there was a Forbes article published in June of 2022. And it kind of takes a step further. So we were seeing hints about management, you know, needing to step up their game. But this Forbes article of June 2022 has it going one step further and saying basically non-toxic isn't good enough. The article is by author Mark C. Perna. And again, listeners can find the link in the description box. But here's what I found important. It's not enough to simply be a non-toxic workplace. Why? Because that's just neutral. Instead, organizations should strive for a healthy and positive workplace culture with leaders who really listen to their customers, employees, and stakeholders. Building such a culture requires effort and follow-through. You don't say. Management needs to continually improve and work towards a better work environment, says ClearForce CEO Tom Miller. Leaders can't just say they're going to do it. They need to initiate the shift and actively work to put what they say into action. Toxicity is not limited to the in-person work environment either. Remote workers are also experiencing harassment through email, video, and phone calls or even chat apps, says Miller. A toxic workplace can be one that pays poorly, shockingly, does not recognize or reward exceptional performance, prioritizes customers over employees, fails to allow internal mobility, denies employees a voice, violates trusts, or prevents its employees from unplugging by constantly blurring the line between work and life. And all too often, these problems start at the top, to which I can say, amen, Mark C. Perna. All right. Well, that's enough. That's enough for the moment,
that's,
Paul.
That's a lot of great stuff there. Thank you.
Yeah, it gives us a lot to chew chew and mull over. Mm-hmm. I mean, for you in reading these things, and I know you have a slightly different work situation because you work sort of freelance and have your own company.
Right.
But you certainly experience you certainly experienced some aspect of that. So bringing in into mind what you've read and sort of what your own experiences are, what are some of the things that sort of strike you? What do you think about some of these, how these narratives are framed, or whether you feel like, you know, are these articles really addressing things? You know?
No, I think it's definitely shining a light on a lot of the issues going on. Yeah, like you say, I work independent and freelance. While I've dealt with toxicity, it might only be on a sort of shoot or a job where I'm able to get away for it. So I really feel for people who have this as an everyday narrative in their lives. You know, one thing you were saying about employers being proactive. No, so when you're giving some of the stats there, and you know, one thing I thought back was in episode one on burnout that we had discussed, you know, workers having their own sort of online communities and sort of backing each other up, having each other's backs, which is sort of hopefully enabling this path towards a healthier work environment, you know, because they're not putting up with it possibly, and they don't want to live or be governed in fear. So I feel like you sort of eyes have been opened from some of the old thoughts and, you know, old ways of, you know, people living.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Well, yes. But it's one of the things that I think is also worth noting is that what we're seeing is that because you're having people leave in such high numbers, and many of them are taking jobs, but they're taking it, you know, for 6 months and then moving on, or a year and then moving on. And certain roles are not being filled because the employers are also not changing. Mm-hmm. They're not changing anything. They're just waiting for, I hate to say it, they're just waiting for some poor schmo to be desperate enough to take it, you know, and some poor schmo may have to take it, but he or she may decide that after, you know, 6 months, a year, that's it. They're moving on as well. And there isn't much consideration given by the part of, I think, these employers to say it takes X amount of time to be able to get somebody acclimatized into a new work field. And if somebody's going in there to say, you know what, whatever, I'm just going to make the money for the time that I need and move on, then you're not going to be hiring somebody who is going to want to do that job well, because they don't see any kind of respect or loyalty. So those things have to kind of go both ways. And it's always, I feel, really increasingly has been a one-way street.
Mm-hmm. And so where is the motivation on either side, really, you know, for a healthy environment to occur.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that we're seeing, for example, and I'm again, I like to throw some facts and statistics out here, but one of the things we're seeing that was done by a professional development and talent workforce company in the Netherlands called Lapaya, was that they were doing stats throughout Europe. And again, you know, the European workforce system is a little bit different in that, where in the States, I think you have this at will end of employment where you can give a basic courtesy of 2 weeks notice. In Europe, prevalently, you have to give, you know, often a minimum of 3 months notice. So moving from job to job isn't quite as quick. You know, it doesn't mean that people don't quit, but in many, many instances, a minimum of 3 months is needed. Yeah.
Okay. That's quite different.
It's quite different. So that's why you see, even though people are resigning, even though people are quitting, the numbers or getting those stats are a little bit slower, but it's still worthwhile when you consider, for example, something like this, that in the Netherlands, taking that as an example, the Dutch Central Bureau of Statistics had registered that a total of 1.9 million people indicated that they had started a new job in 2022, which is nearly 500,000 more than in 2021. And again, that means that if you've got, you know, nearly 2 million people starting in a job, they quit and began something new. And then by the end of 2022, and this is worth noting, 1.2 million people in the Netherlands have decided to work freelance, which is a huge uptick in the country. And it's indicative of sort of general work dissatisfaction.
Right.
Yeah. And then here's just like another stat. In the UK, in 2022, over 800,000 people resigned from their jobs. They just up and resigned. And now England is a pretty populous country. This is what they've actually been able to sort of just determine. And historically, this is the highest resignations that the country has seen in over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I would consider this a conservative estimate because it just doesn't include, it doesn't specify and it doesn't include which workforce. Were these people with full-time jobs? Because they might not be counted if they're in freelance or part-time or, you know, right. So on. And then who knew that Gallup, the Gallup poll has an annual sort of workplace survey in Germany, which is so random. But in Germany, the study shows that there's basically a record number of employees that are looking for a new job, which is 4 in 10 say that they would stop working entirely if they could afford it. That's how dissatisfied they are. Right?
That ought to tell you something.
That ought to tell you something. And, you know, Germans grumble, I know, but there is a tendency to like sort of just get on with it, you know. But if 4 in 10 kind of just say to you, you know what, if I never have to work another day in my life, it will be too soon.
That's a significant number.
Yeah. And you know, that correlates to a 2019 study by a Danish company called Pekin, which received 80 million responses from employees hailing from about 160 different countries worldwide. And it revealed mm-hmm. that 23% of employees in Germany were unsatisfied in the workplace. And that puts them a whopping 1% above UK, which has always been ranked amongst the top in Europe as being unsatisfied with their work.
Wow.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm sorry. There's noises outside. There's just things going on. anyway, but yeah, so this is, you know, we're seeing these statistics in France too. You're having more than 500,000 resignations per quarter in 2022. You know, yeah. So people are leaving the workforce in droves because they're like, it's just not worth it. It's not worth it. And it goes back to that Forbes article, non-toxic isn't good enough. Right?
Sure. We need to get on the positive side of things.
Exactly. I think one of the things that were, you know, where I do have questions and I think it's worth sort of expanding on, there are a lot of common sense solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's still questions. There's still a lot of, you know, dangling participles, as it were. Whether you get common sense solutions from this company called Lapaya, where they say, you know, you need to improve working conditions, address burnout, foster employee engagement, offer fair compensation, helping employees acquire new skills. Well, I feel like saying, well, you don't really need to be business savvy or an expert in HR to get this. This just seems obvious. But it feels like if you aren't, or if there isn't, a real meaningful push to actually change the work environment and business culture, then this doesn't seem to matter. And people will continue leaving the workforce. I know that there are people that are the old guard and say, oh, that's because young people, you know, the young generation is very demanding and they don't want to do anything. And, you know, they have all these very high expectations. Well, that could be true. That could be true. It could also be that some young people are seeing older generations working like basically like dogs and going, I'm out. I'm not.
Yeah, they've learned from their predecessors, really.
Yeah, they've seen it in their parents. You know, they've seen it maybe in going into jobs and seeing certain people miserable and going, no, I'm not doing that. And there are, for all the stereotypes that we have for whether they are, you know, millennials or Gen Zs or whatever, or Gen Zs, if you prefer. Gen Z doesn't roll off quite the same, does it? But, you know, there are some critiques that I think are for every generation that are valid. But I think what you're actually seeing is there is a system in place that it's past its sell-by date. There's a system in place that isn't functioning. And I think people are just tired. The things that we're seeing is how people are really making a choice of their well-being over just getting a job to pay the bills.
Right. And thankfully they are, because it's needless to say, very important.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the concerns I have, of course, when I'm reading all of this, or not concerns, it's one of the considerations I have is, again, you know, we're looking at a lot of corporate jobs. We're looking at people who are sort of what we might traditionally call white collar work. And even though there is mention of people who are in retail, fast food, hospitality, et cetera, I mean, I feel like we really need to consider more realistically, and I think more inclusively, people that are in jobs that are maybe not part of these statistics and research.
Right.
So, you know, I'm wondering, like, what it must be like for the poor Amazon worker, or for the person who's your courier, whether they're FedEx, DHL, UPS, whatever, the person who's working in environments that are really, really tough in education. I feel like, you know, a lot of teachers and people in education are having huge burnouts. I know that in many parts of Europe, there is a huge shortage of teachers who've just left the workforce. They're just so tired.
Oh, same in the US.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you're dealing with just way too many boxes to tick off. You know, it's getting impossible to just be constantly putting out fires and at the same time not be compensated for it, not be heard, not be supported.
Right.
So I think, you know, I think there are many more work fields that need to be considered to make this, well, I don't want to say it needs to become more salient, but for there to be a realization that it's not just in certain fields. It's not just in the corporate field. It's not just in sort of the tech work and the tech fields where people are feeling this. This is across board. Whether you are earning whether you're earning a meager wage or whether you are a six figure, even seven figure earner.
Right. No, like you say, like you've brought up so many great points and statistics there, and it does tell quite a bit of the story and gives us a lot to chew on. But there's still more to be told. You know, there's really, you know, we don't have the full picture.
Well, we don't have it because it's not being included. I think that's the thing to consider. That's a careful omission, because when you have articles that are written by the Harvard Business Review, Forbes, all these other outlets, you know, there's always this sort of, I'm going to carefully skirt around certain issues. And if I skirt around them, then I don't have to address them.
This is true.
So let's just take a case in point. If we were looking at the IT Brief article or any of the other articles that I mentioned, including the Forbes article that is talking about, you know, management needing to up their game and leadership needing to up their game, I said, well, you know, it's worth noting that none of these articles really specifically call out the owners, the investors, the governing boards, the CEOs, the shareholders, the stakeholders of these major industries. They don't call out the entire economic framework or the narrative, which is, you know, that this is the way work is, and we'll just continue applying sort of band-aid plaster-like solutions. And it's as if to say these additional entities don't play a direct or active role in steering the cultural framework as well as the general attitude within companies, i.e. these toxic work environments.
Right. Yeah, I suppose there's a bit of self-preservation there as well.
There is. So it's like you're willing to go only up until this point, but no further. Right. And so for me, I feel like, well, I doubt that, you know, the Larry Finks, the Bill Gates, the Jeff Bezos, the Waltham families, these shareholders, the Soroses, et cetera, you know, the Rupert Murdochs. I don't think any of these big, big behemoths, sort of multi-billionaires who are running multiple industries, they actually give two figs about these matters. I don't think they do, because if they did, we would be seeing some kind of shift, right? And, you know, I think if anything, they're probably the first to try and squelch any kind of meaningful change that would benefit employees, give out opportunities for things like local unions or provide above livable wages. Why is this still in, you know, the 21st flipping century at the point of contention of giving people a livable wage, you know? And meanwhile, these companies and these individuals have, you know, are not just making hand over fist, but they're doing it tax-free. And when I say tax-free, it's on your dime.
Yes, and often subsidized by governments.
Correct. You know. It's at your expense. So, you know, I feel like, again, it's an important, this is really important. All of what we're discussing is really important, but I'm noticing what's being left out.
Right.
What is being left out is who is really steering the ship? Who's really steering the ship within the current work employment paradigm? And who are the individuals or entities steering the ship when it comes to these companies?
Yes. Not to mention that they control the airwaves, the newspapers,
everything.
Social media, multimedia.
Yeah, everything. People are, referring to this as sort of the globalist entities or the globalist agendas. And yes, it is there. It's a sort of basically creating a diktat for people. And I think what is now emerging is people are saying, well, you can take that diktat.
which, by the way, is a new word for me. I'm going to have to look that one up.
Oh, yeah.
Context for now.
It's sort of like an ultimatum, I'm dictating to you what this is, and this is how things are done. And people are saying, well, I'm just choosing not to participate.
Right.
I'm just choosing not to participate. And the reason that it's impossible for these entities to now ignore it is because when it's a million, mm-hmm. It's not a big drop in the bucket. But once you get into the tens of millions, and once you are seeing a pattern across companies, large or small, that's
yes.
too big to be ignored.
Yes, the eyebrows will be raising.
Eyebrows will be raised, yes. Whether it's going to be just more of a, we've got a problem, or whether it's actually going to be addressed is an entirely different matter. Circling back to what we were sort of just kind of discussing, I think the biggest overarching thing that I see when I'm looking at these articles is that whether articles are saying, employees need to feel connected, they need to feel encouraged, they need to feel compensated. If there aren't real specifics as to what does that mean?
Right.
When you say they're being compensated, are workers in a particular field, by and large, being underpaid? If the answer is yes, then what will they need to make a livable wage depending on where they live? And it shouldn't just be livable. For me, it should be thrivable. Because when you have happy people working, then you have a productive society, then you have a more engaged society. And what you have right now is far from that, right? The other question is how can workers feel engaged when the toxic work environment, including poor management or leadership or high or unrealistic performance pressure or lack of financial incentives are so prevalent? They can't, right? We're getting these repeated patterns of people feeling that the environment that they're in is affecting their well-being to the point that they would rather not work, do with less, or maybe get some part-time job than to stick it out further in a particular environment.
Sure, sure. Especially, when, like you mentioned before, when the compensation is the bare minimum, why put up with that,
Indeed. Indeed. Well, I'll be adding my final thoughts before we wrap things up on this episode. So stick around and we'll be back in 2 shakes of a lamb's tail. Well, hello there. Welcome back. So here are my final thoughts. Given the necessity, love, hate, thoughts, and feelings so many of us have around this tricky 4-letter word, it's worthwhile that we more proactively envisage what else could be done at the individual and collective levels to shift away and perhaps out of the current work paradigm altogether, especially given the onerousness that this creates from cradle to grave. Much like in our first episode on burnout, the fundamental issues around toxic work environments and people feeling generally so unhappy is that there is a tendency to look at symptoms while not addressing the underlying and root causes. Like anything which is ailing yet somehow still managing to hobble along, it binds those who believe themselves to be in control of said established systems to quite literally continue business as usual while figuring out new ways of herding people into compliance. And while there's the old scientific axiom that correlation isn't causation, sometimes correlation is indeed causation. And there is plenty of evidence of this when it comes to the topic of work. We've lived a history of work that includes serfdom and slavery, still prevalent, mind you, in many guises in this day and age. We have had, or still have, to contend with unfair labor and work practices, unequal pay for the same work, nepotism, favoritism, sexism, ageism, cutthroat competitiveness, being underqualified, being overqualified, and endlessly tweaking our CV to fit a litany of ever-changing requirements from prospective employers. All these things have at one point or another been encouraged, lauded, or simply accepted as a fact of life. Why? Then, once you're employed, it seems many of us spend copious amounts of time having to partake in what seems like endless box-ticking exercises, such as employee compliance, copious safety regulation, codes of conduct, and an increasing number of training courses and certificates that employees often have to complete outside of their work hours and often uncompensated. If work guidelines were clearly and succinctly laid out, and people had a non-convoluted set of protocols that they could refer to as needed, then perhaps one could do away with the ongoing barrage of the often mind-numbingly tedious trainings. And while we assume that these things are put in place to ensure work safety, accountability, and company policy, it is oh so convenient that the copious legalese inserted in these never-ending guidelines and trainings are more about protecting the business from employee lawsuits and formal complaints than actually doing anything for you. The workplace and working, what we should expect from it, its hierarchies, its inescapable prevalence in our lives, and let's face it, our ability to even have one, is so deeply ingrained that it often feels like this is the only purpose to our existence. And if that's the case, then we're truly missing something in our personal and collective development. Is it any wonder that toxic work environments and the many, many issues surrounding work and employment has become such an increasingly prevalent talking point? To me, it's no surprise that so many of us are searching for or attempting different means of approaching work within the established systems, but these too have their shortcomings. Because it doesn't matter how much a company tarts up their profile, makes the workplace more diverse or inclusive, with long-winded and politically correct saccharine mission statements, at the end of the day, if the company you work for engages in dubious practices or products, then it doesn't matter how many virtue signals it adopts or how many quirky, infantile work titles it doles out. The company is shady. Now, don't misunderstand me. I believe that there is nothing inherently wrong with the exchange of energies, be it services, products, physical labor, etc., i.e. work for pay. Money is a tool as a means for material acquisition and or services. Money is neither good nor evil. It's neutral. How one relates to it and how one uses it can create either a positive or negative experience or outcome. However, things get complicated and obfuscated when there is such a lopsided and seemingly arbitrary monetary value attached to certain works, services, and products, whilst severely shortchanging others. And these monetary rewards are established by external entities who have the power to exert and determine the price of everything, whilst simultaneously showing that they understand the value of nothing. Worse still, they don't care, because their mantra is whatever the market and you, you poor plebeian, are willing to bear. To serve and produce in exchange for money for which you might be able to afford a place to live, food, entertainment, education, and if you're lucky, the occasional holiday, that's what we seem to be geared for. The thing is, I think that actually most of us want to do something. We want to be productive, creative, use our skills, talents, know-how, and feel like we can contribute, do, support, lead. In other words, work, especially if said work is meaningful and rewarding. But that's just it. It takes little acuity of the past and more recent history to recognize that employment and earning money is long enmeshed in a calcified, complex economic matrix that often conjures up images of financiers, profiteers, puppeteers, and privateers. Ironically, these figures are often lauded and idolized in history, academia, books, and in films. The imbalance we see and experience within the economic and work systems are there by design, and there are plenty of studies and well-researched books to corroborate this. And before you think, oh, here we go, we're getting into the realm of conspiracy theory, well, it's not a theory. As the late George Carlin so keenly observed, there's no need for formal conspiracies when all of these economic and political elites share the same ideology, which they learned from their environment growing up in similar positions of privilege within the dominant culture. Better alternatives than our prevailing and toxic work environments are more than possible if we are only willing to get out of our ingrained and programmed belief systems, and this includes a mindset of serfdom and scarcity. At the same time, we also need to be aware, knowledgeable, and vigilant of potential undermining entities which, like any parasite, might want to infiltrate, co-opt, and own what you do as a means to ensure the status quo. But you don't need to take my word for it. There are plenty of seminal works by authors who have done copious critique and research in these areas. You'll find that there are many top-down, opaquely guised proposals led forth by the likes of multi-billionaires with their many investment firms and their shell companies, partners, stakeholders, foundations, or NGOs, which have direct ties to mountains of private capital, usually unwittingly funneled through taxpayers as cash. And said firms form these financially murky private-public partnerships, which promote noble-sounding things like combating climate change, racial and gender equality, health education, and so on. And as they try to dazzle, or is it distract, the masses with all the right slogans and virtue signaling, they also actively engage in media outlets and their well-appointed so-called experts to push often contentious talking points without any real or meaningful civil debates, so that the public gets distracted through yelling matches and salacious or curated character assassinations of anyone who steps out of the established boundary, all while those very individuals and entities openly implement their own economic agendas, and with big private clubs, which, to paraphrase Carlin yet again, you ain't in. So, when it comes to work structures, these individuals and their capital groups, whose far-reaching tentacles are deeply invested in everything from Wall Street to Sesame Street, actually have no incentive, no need to want to change things. As far as most of them are concerned, you're simply an expendable consumer. Whilst they need your labor, they also fear and loathe what you could be capable of should more of you come together to create, for example, a parallel society, which would indeed be a threat to their established financial and societal stranglehold. What is needed is a major breakaway from the current systems in order to create something new. And if the ongoing pattern of tens of millions of people leaving the workforce is anything to go by, then perhaps this isn't so implausible. Whether you're all in for a four-day work week, flexible hours, or want to continue a traditional five-day, 40-plus-hour work week, when all is said and done, I think most of us would agree that what we'd like to have is a far more balanced and rewarding living and life. Ultimately, I believe we yearn for something far more of the people, by the people, and for the people. Am I right, Paul?
This is it.
So something that is far more localized, decentralized, yet internationally supportive, without the directives of some inaccessible, ivory-towered overlords. There are movements akin to this already taking shape and underway. Maybe some of you have found your community, and if you have, we'd love to hear from you and to know about your experiences. We might also need to understand that even if many of us have had experiences or feel similarly around the current work paradigm, we might not have the same approach, methods, or means to implement a different kind of work system, and that's okay. We can still support or draw ideas from one another, especially if our values are rooted in similar ideals. And if we work, yes, I said work, both individually and as communities towards it, then with a fair amount of perspicacity, well, you know what they say, shift happens. With that, we'll be taking a short break before we preview what's coming up next.
So, Nusha, what's coming up next time?
Well, Paul, as mentioned in our next episode, we'll be staying on the topic of work, and we'll have a look at a rather viral 2013 article by Professor David Graeber and his positing of yet another modern malaise, the phenomenon of bullshit jobs, and how this is still resonant 10 years after its publication.
And we'll continue to peel back the layers our society currently ascribes to work and the glorification of busy, and discuss ways in which we can collectively and meaningfully change our ideas around work in the current paradigm.
On that note, on behalf of Paul and myself, thank you so much for listening. We hope this episode has been thought-provoking enough for you to have your own quantum conversations. Until next time, keep those little gray cells churning, and Godspeed.